Welcome to Mystical Dispute, the MTG debate show. I'm Garrett Gardner, or G-Guards, and I'm joined by Zach Ortz, or Zvazda.
Yo, what's up?
Today we're going to talk about the Strixhaven spoilers before they come out, and we have specific cards we're going to argue against each other for. So I'm super excited about that. So Strixhaven actually releases on Thursday, April 15th. We're recording this just 2 days beforehand, and we're real excited to jam the actual set, but we went through and we graded every single card in the set and compared those grades to one another, and we found the most contentious grades, the ones that were the furthest apart, and we decided to group them up into some categories and argue about them.
Yeah, it's a little scary because we've done this for probably every set since we met each other.
Yep, absolutely.
just argued about cards, but this is
like Battle for Zendikar, right? That was the first.
Would that have been the first one?
I think that was the first one, yeah.
So this will be the first time that we're putting the record anywhere other than our Gmail,
yeah, our private
archive.
Gmail.
Yeah.
so it's out there because so it's one of Zach's favorite pastimes to dig up old card grades and just make us eat it months into the format when we were dead wrong. And he ends up, I gotta say, I'm throwing it in there, I think he's gonna be right more often than me. I wouldn't bet on me.
I think I do generally edge you out and I'm right more often, but mm-hmm. I think I'm pretty good about when I'm wrong of finding those things. There's definitely been stuff that I've been mega wrong about.
Yeah, well, I always try to remember those the most because those are the times I'm going to cherish each one of those. But this set, I think, is one of the hardest sets to grade the hardest set to grade that I've ever done in my whole history of playing Magic at like a grinder level where I jam like, you know, 50 drafts or more of each. Like, this set is so difficult to parse.
Yeah, I think we're about to get into the lesson and learn cards. That's something that's very difficult to evaluate. But then on top of that, there are all these clues that sort of point towards it being a very synergistic forward set. And whenever that happens, it just gets really tricky to evaluate those cards because it's like, well, if X, Y, and Z is good and you need A, B, and C to happen, then this card is going to be good. And it's not just going to be good, it's going to be really good.
Right.
But if any of those things fall flat, then it's just going to be unplayable. You can't put it in your deck at all. So
yeah.
Something like Mist Intruder, we talked about Battle for Zendikar, right?
Yeah.
2-mana, 1/2 flyer that when it dealt damage to your opponent, it exiled the top card of their library.
Right. Which does like nothing. And it ended up being like a fantastic enabler for, what was it called? That ability was called Ingest, but then it was called
Process.
Process. Yeah. And that could enable all kinds of amazing strategies. Pretty weird. But I guess we'll get into the first category then.
Yeah.
One of the major mechanics of Strixhaven is learn and lesson. So a card that says learn on it as an extra ability allows you to search for a lesson card outside of the game that you own and put it into your hand. Learn doesn't require you to search up a lesson. You can also discard a card and then draw a card as a fail case. And so there are a bunch of lessons. I think there's like 20 lessons in the format. And so you put them in your sideboard in draft or sealed, and then you can go search them up with the learn cards. And I think that we are taking opposite approaches to how powerful this is going to end up being. And like I said, I'm not terribly confident, but I will exude that confidence to the utmost degree. I don't think from the spoiler that Lesson and Learn is going to be that powerful.
Mm-hmm.
My baseline has been assuming that Learn cards are actually worse than if they just said draw a card.
Yes. And so my assumption is that they are slightly better than if they said draw a card.
Right. Why don't we start on a specific card?
Sure. Yeah. Let's start with Hunt for Specimens. This is 1 and a black for a sorcery and says create a 1/1 black and green pest token. Creature token with when this creature dies, you gain 1 life. Learn. And so I look at this card and I think this is just a better Elvish Visionary. It's an Elvish Visionary that...
Which is a two mana, 1/1 that draws a card when it enters, right?
Yep. And the reason I think this is just better than that, a multitude of reasons. So it's a spell. This is a spell matter set. I think Learn is going to be extremely flexible when you have, let's say, 3 to 5 spells in your sideboard that you can choose from, and you know that the card that you're drawing is always a spell, even if it's sometimes a slightly below rate spell. I think that's better than having 50% or 40 to 60% chance of drawing a land. And then the times that it's worse than drawing a card, mostly the times where you need to draw a land, you'll be able to just rummage something expensive away to try and hit that land. So the times where you need to draw a land or you're digging for something specific in your deck, then it's a little worse than draw a card, but I think functionally it's not going to end up being too much worse, because if you're digging, you either really need to hit that card so the extra card doesn't matter all that much, or if same thing, if you need to hit a land, your hand is stacked with spells and you really just need to hit that land drop. So I think throughout the time that I've been playing Magic, we've sort of gotten a lot of different mechanics that have both sides have sort of seemed underpowered. Mm-hmm. But just having flexibility is something that is much more powerful than it generally seems. So I think of something like Bestow or something like the modal DFC lands that we just had, mm-hmm. where kind of none of the spells were really all that exciting. And then cards like Awaken, where every spell is basically just not something you'd really want to be playing, but give yourself the flexibility of casting it for cheap or turning it into a hasty creature that animates one of your lands, and just having that flexibility.
That was the battle for Zendikar, where you could put a certain number of +1/+1 counters on a land and basically turn it into a creature. And it was added to stuff like bounce a creature or target opponent discards 2 cards, and that sort of effect that's kind of like marginal, but once you tack it onto a creature, it became very good.
Yeah, and so I think this is sort of like all of the flexibility that you could ever want, because you get to put all these cards in your sideboard that are effects that are, when you draw them, when you need them, are extremely good, but when you draw them, when you don't need them, they can be blanks. And so I think just giving yourself the opportunity to draw those cards when you want to draw them, but never draw them when you don't want to draw them, just seems like inherently extremely powerful to me.
Right. And I'm thinking specifically of the ingest/process, you know, with Learn mm-hmm. and Lesson, because it was 2 different keyword abilities that worked together, and they ended up working together super well in Battle for Zendikar, where you were playing these cards that you wouldn't normally assume you would play. But when I heard about the mechanic, I was actually surprised. I thought that the Learn cards were going to be powerful and the Lesson cards were going to be a little less powerful, just sort of marginal added on effects. Instead, it's kind of the opposite. Most of the Learn cards in the format, at least at common and uncommon, are pretty bad. So, for instance, with Hunt for Specimens, the 2-mana 1/1, I mean, that's pretty bad. That's like a pretty horrible card. You have to add draw a card on that for it to be playable, and even Velvish Visionary was sometimes not a super great card. And the Learn cards themselves range somewhere between, like, you almost never expect to play them and perfectly playable vanilla creatures, specifically each of the 5 colleges. They each have a vanilla creature associated with them that's a lesson that you can search up, and it's kind of like a D+ level creature for each of the 5 colleges. So that was kind of the shorthand that I had been using when I see a card has Learn, just like imagining that you are going to draw one of those mascots, they're calling them. And I think that is worse than just draw a card, and that is why I came to that conclusion. Basically, it just seems like the lesson cards ended up being like kind of underwhelming. Again, I have no idea how it's going to play out, but it just seems to me like I'm not going to go hard on this whole Learn Lesson thing, because the other big, huge issue with it is that if you assume that it's better than draw a card, you're also kind of not thinking about the opportunity cost during the actual draft. You have to spend a pick on all of the lessons, and if you're taking D+ level vanilla creatures over like removal spells and decent threats on their own, just so that your Learn card card, which is already probably not great, can get you some value, I feel like that might not end up working. That's at least my first impression of this ability, but I have been surprised before. Still, on Hunt for Specimens, we do letter grades between F and A. I gave Hunt for Specimens a D+.
Yeah, and I gave it a C+. And honestly, I would not be surprised if it ended up being a B-. I was trying to decide between a C+ and a B-. I just think it's going to be glue that, like, Elvish Visionary has been a B- before. Like, it's just been a 2-drop that you always wanted.
Right.
And I think this is better than Elvish Visionary. It triggers Magecraft. It lets you get the spells.
Well, you mentioned one thing is that sometimes Visionary draws you a land, but one thing I noticed about this format in general is that it seems very mana intensive. I think this is going to probably be an 18 land format, especially with those dual colored scry lands that we saw. And I think because of that, you'll want to draw a land some number of the time. You know, it's not always bad. So I don't know if that's downside, because Learn can never draw you a card unless you're doing the rummage.
But you can sort of mitigate that if you want to, right? You can play 18 lands, or if it's that important for you to just hit every land drop and you have enough Learn and Lesson cards and enough of the dual lands that are going to let you scry, like, you can just play 19 lands. There's nothing saying you can't do that. And especially if you're...
I mean, I feel like a lot of people are going to freak out at that concept, but yeah, it's totally possible. Yeah.
I'm not saying, like, I'm definitely going to do that, or that seems like something we are going to regularly be doing. But if that's something you're concerned about, like, you can just mitigate it in deck building. As far as the opportunity cost of drafting the lessons goes, this is the part that I'm the most unsure about. But the reason that I'm optimistic about it is twofold. One, I think it's sort of similar to, like, drafting the Snowlands in Kaldheim. Like, those were times where we were second or third picking literal basic lands.
Right, yep.
Like, all they did was tap for mana. They weren't taking up our playable counts.
Yep.
And so I think just being able to have access to more of the cards that you pick from the draft is just upside. If you have 5 or 6 cards in your sideboard, or then you just have so much added flexibility and access to more types of effects that I think it's just going to be very powerful. I think it's going to be powerful to be able to play, let's say you draft 22 playables, a couple dual lands, and 5 sideboard cards, you get to play 29 out of the 45 cards that you drafted. That just seems inherently powerful to me.
Yeah, but a lot of those cards are like D+ cards, right? Because, like, I'm using the baseline that we have the 5 mascots, which are all like D+ level vanilla cards. And you don't put those in your deck for a reason, because they don't do a lot. And maybe we should list out what they are.
Sure, yeah.
But there's a 5-mana 4/4. There's a 3-mana 3/2. There's a 3-mana 2/1 flying. There's a 3-mana that makes 2/1/1s. Where you gain a life when they die. And then the last one is an X in 2 to make an XX. So that one's probably the worst of the bunch in terms of rate. You would almost never play that card, I think.
We had a better version of that card that we never played in, I think it was Ikoria, actually. It was green and X.
Oh, yeah, and you never played that card.
You never played that card.
IV Elemental, I believe.
But when these are never cards that you have to draw when you don't want them, and they're always a free card, or they're always the tacked on card,
right,
to me, a 2-mana 1/1 spell, if it said it always draws you a 3-mana make 2 1/1s card, that just seems very strong to me. Because
but if you tack that together, you're spending 2-mana for a 1/1, and then you're spending 3-mana for 2 more 1/1s, so you're spending 5-mana over 2 turns for 3 1/1s, which is not really even that good. That's like a flashback card that makes 2 1/1s after you cast it, right? Which I don't think that card would be that
flashback's
great.
Flashback's really good.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's ups and downs of flashback. You can mill that one, but
yeah, that's true.
But I just think that, like, what you've described, it would be a card that would be your 23rd playable, maybe, you know?
Probably your 24th, yeah, but you're never, again, you're never going to have to draw it if you don't want to draw it.
Right. I mean, the choice is definitely an upside of Learn.
And, like, there is additional upside in those 1-1s because the life gain is relevant in this format. Black green does have a sacrifice.
Right.
Like, I think there's a chance you maybe even would be happy playing that card in a good amount of black green decks in this format. And I think that's kind of true for all of them except the Simic one. And for that reason, the Simic one's the only one that I...
That's the one, the XX.
Yeah, the XX. And that one I gave a C+, and all of the others I gave B-. I think they're just... You're going to take them very highly. They're, if you could have one of each mascot that your colors can cast, I think every deck is going to want that.
Right. So Hunt for Specimens, I say D+.
Yeah, I say C+.
All right. And let's move on to the lesson summon cards, because we've been talking about those a little bit. The two that we disagreed on the most are Elemental Summoning. It's 3, and then Hybrid Blue Red and Hybrid Blue Red for 5 mana total, and it makes a 4/4 Elemental, and that is a lesson card. And then the Pest Summoning is 2 and a black to make 2 1/1s. When they die, you gain 1 life. For Elemental Summoning, I gave it a C.
And I gave it a B-.
On Pest Summoning, again, I gave it a C.
I think I gave it a B- as well.
And my reasoning on those is because you just would never want to play that card in your main deck, so you're taking it specifically to put it into your sideboard. I mean, I guess you don't never want to play it in your main deck, but it's your 24th or 25th card.
You'd be pretty sad to main deck that, most of the time.
You'd be pretty sad to main deck either one of those. So you're picking it so that you pick learn cards higher so that you can dig them out of your sideboard. And they don't seem like that much of a payoff. Like for instance, if you pair them with Hunt for Specimens, you're paying 2 mana to make a 1/1, searching up either 2 more 1/1s or a 4/4 for 5, which just does not seem that powerful to me.
I mean, so you also have to remember they're all spells, so they're all going to trigger Magecraft.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a Spells Matter set.
True, yes.
Like, I think some amount of Visit decks would just play a 5-mana 4/4 that counts towards your spell count.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that helps a bunch. I will, at least early on, any lesson, I will be taking it over any card that I'm reasonably certain will not make my main deck. Because if I'm not going to play that card, then I'm just...
You might as well take something for your sideboard. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, it's going to be interesting to see where they're going to be taken in the pack. Like, are all the lessons going to be gone? Oh, that's something we should mention, by the way. Every pack, one of the common slots is going to be replaced with either a common, uncommon, or rare lesson. And then some of the uncommon slots are sometimes lessons as well. So you can have up to 2 lessons, I believe, in a pack. You're always guaranteed to have at least 1 lesson in every pack.
The scariest thing is if the community just, like, in general decides to overvalue lessons. Mm-hmm. Then obviously if that happens, then probably all of my grades will be wrong for at least as long as that is happening.
Right. It's probably one of the more meta dependent things that we've seen.
Probably, unless they are just, like, extremely good and you are supposed to just first pick your lessons almost every time.
Well, I would be shocked, but, you know, quote me on that.
I wouldn't be shocked if one of the things I've been mulling around in my head is if you do open a mascot, if you're first picking it like half of the time.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I guess I could see it, but I still would be shocked because they're pretty underrated. But I guess if you're approaching them as if they're free. The thing is, not so much though the lessons. It's more that the learn cards, as far as I could see, were pretty bad. And maybe we could lead into one of those cards to make this point. Is Eye Twitch is a black mana for a 1/1 flying, and when it dies, you learn, and that's it. And I gave Eye Twitch a C-.
Yep, I gave this one a C+. Again, I was on the fence between whether I wanted to give it a C+ or a B-.
Yeah,
there's a couple factors there. I think if you always knew you were going to have a 1-mana 1/1 on turn 1, then you'd be pretty happy with that card. And then as soon as it's dying into something else, then that's great. And so that makes it both a good early turn play and then a fine late game play, because you can at least jump with it and get whatever card you're looking at getting out of it. I think there's another couple of things in the format that make iTwitch particularly interesting. One of them is that 2-mana 5/4.
Right, yep.
That you either have to pay 3 extra mana or sacrifice a creature for. So that obviously combos really well with Unwilling Ingredient, which is the 1-mana 1/1 menace. And then you can pay 2 and a black to exile it from your graveyard to draw a card. But I think it also combos extremely well with iTwitch.
Right. Which one do you think is better, iTwitch or Ingredient?
Probably iTwitch. I'd take iTwitch over Ingredient right now.
Yeah. See, I would absolutely take the Ingredient first. I'm curious to see where it is. I don't think 1-mana 1/1 flyings are very good because they're just such a terrible top deck late. And even when you're curving out, if you didn't have that color of mana, it kind of punishes you.
That's true.
And also, I just like, in general, my approach to 1-power creatures is that they better be utility creatures, because 1-power isn't enough to win any race. And it's just not a relevant creature unless it's trading with like an X1.
Yeah, that's definitely true. But when they draw you a card, it becomes a different story. And again, that's
right.
Exactly where, how close is Learn going to be to drawing a card?
Right. I think I'm saying that it's like, seems to me like it's going to be somewhat notably worse than just draw a card. And you're saying the opposite. It's going to be somewhat notably better than draw a card.
Yeah, I think that's about where it's going to end up.
So it's basically Diabolic Tutor for you, Oli.
Yeah, yeah, it's exactly Diabolic Tutor.
To talk about the last card I think we have in this category, which I think is representative of a lot of the effects in this format, we have Reduced to Memory. Reduced to Memory is 1 white-white for a lesson sorcery. It says exile target non-land permanent. Its controller creates a 3/2 red and white spirit creature token, which is the red-white mascot. But its controller, notably, is the person who creates that token. So this, to me, looks like terrible, and you almost never want to play that. You certainly would never put that card anywhere near your main deck. And a lot of the lessons, when I read them, they felt that way. You just don't want to put this lesson in your main deck ever. You would never do it, you know? There's one that does like 1 damage and destroys an artifact.
Yep.
There's one that puts 2+1/+1 counters on a creature and it gets vigilance until end of turn or something like that. There's just like a couple cards that you just would never want to touch with a 10-foot pole. And the idea, I guess, is that you have a toolbox with your Learn cards. So if they play some Unbeatable Bomb, you can reduce it to memory. Or if they lock down your creature, you can get a creature's value worth out in an emergency or something like that. There's board states where Reduced to Memory can actually do something, but it's like a truly terrible Raven form.
Yes. It is a worse version of a Raven form, except you don't ever have to draw it unless you want to draw it.
Right.
Like, it is any permanent. So you can hit a planeswalker, you can hit an artifact, you can hit an enchantment. And I think when that happens, you're going to be thrilled to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you won't be able to, and you'll upgrade your 1/1 into a 3/2 and be fine with that.
Because it was
and
free.
And for your Magecraft.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
But that is my argument against Learn, is that none of the cards that say Learn, it's not free. You wouldn't want to play the effect unless it said draw a card at least on almost any of the Learn cards. There's a couple exceptions to that at rare, but like for the most part, common and uncommon Learn cards, they need to say Learn.
Yeah, there's a 3-damage burn spell,
right?
That's an exception to that.
I gave Reduced to Memory a D+, because I think that's about where I'll take it. Like, I'll take it if it wheels around and it's the last couple cards in the pack, but I just don't see myself wanting that toolbox very often.
Yeah, I put it as a C+. I think if there's a C in the pack, a card that I don't know for sure if it's going to make my main deck, then I'm going to take this over it. So I should say I'm bullish on the lesson grades because I think the first version of them is so good. Once you have the first version, then the second copy becomes like an F.
Oh, but I see. Right.
I think having that first version.
The first copy of it, and then the second copy, because you're never going to cast 2 of that effect.
Yeah, or at least the second version is so much less important.
Right.
Let's say you have 5 Learn cards in your deck. Every unique lesson you pick up, you essentially have 5 copies of that in your deck. And having a second copy just is not all that useful to you at all.
Right, right.
That might be different for the mascots. It might end up, like, you might want to double up on some of those. But to start, I'm going to probably not take second copies of any of the lessons.
Right.
But I think that first copy is going to be important enough that I'm going to prioritize them pretty highly.
Well, I'm excited to see how Lesson and Learn pans out. But, you know, I'm not assuming it's bad. I just think that it looks to me like it's going to be worse than the Texas is Draw card.
Yeah, but maybe we can just quickly talk about Rise to Extus. So are you saying that you think that card is, like, very bad?
So Rise to Extus is 4, and then hybrid white-black. So 6 mana for exile target creature. Exile up to 1 target instant or sorcery card from a graveyard, and then learn. I think Rise of Extus is one of the exceptions. That one's one of the better ones. A lot of them are, like, destroy an artifact or put counters on something.
I'm only bringing it up not to argue about the grade of it, but to say that I think the learn cards might be a little better than you're giving them credit for.
My overarching point here is that most of the learn cards, even if they said draw a card, you might not play them.
So, I mean, it's possible, like, the biggest difference here is that I just think a lot of those cards are a lot better than you do. And so then the lessons need to do less heavy lifting.
Right.
Because I'm happier with their effect combined with what the lessons are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They look bad to me, but we'll see.
Yeah, we will.
We had a couple disagreements about some of the removal spells that I thought was worth arguing about. First and foremost, Lash of Malice is 1 black instant, and it says target creature gets +2/-2 until end of turn. So it's basically Disfigure.
Yeah, it's basically a much worse version of Disfigure, yeah.
My grade on that one is a B-.
Yep, and I gave it a D+.
Wow. So here's the thing. Some people did some evaluations on the creature size in this format, and it is quite low, just like Kaldheim. So 2 toughness is pretty standard. So this is going to be 1 mana destroy a lot of creatures at instant speed. Now, unlike Disfigure, which is obviously better, you can't turn a 4/4 into a 2/2 and block with your 3/3. It's going to 2/1 you if you try to pull something like that. You have to outright kill it, or you have to have extra damage on it for some other reason. But I still think that the card is going to perform pretty well as just an instant speed trick, especially because it just kills a lot of 2 and 3 and even some 4 drops.
So how many of these can you play? Will you start by playing in your deck? Will you play up to 3?
I think I would play at least 2, and then, like, the third one will be dependent. I think I would rather have the third one in my sideboard.
Yeah, so, like, it's just worse than Shock, I think, right? We can agree on that.
No, yeah, okay, yeah. We can agree that it's just worse than Shock.
So I feel like Shock was at its best in M21 that I can remember it in a recent format. And it's still, I went and checked MTG Primer, and it was rated a C+.
Okay,
for M21. And I just feel like your baseline for Shock is between a C- and a C+, depending on the format.
Right.
And so I'm generally going to start with it at the lower grade because it's something that I don't need to prioritize that heavily, because you won't even necessarily main deck all of them.
And I guess Frostbite in Kaldheim was not a B-. You know, it was probably a C+ range card at most.
And that one could be a Lightning Bolt.
And that one could be a Lightning... Well, it could be a Creature Lightning Bolt, but yes.
Yeah, a Creature Lightning Bolt.
Okay, well, you've talked me down maybe from B-, but I still think this is going to be like a top black common pick.
I think it's going to be something that you probably can play a good amount of the time, but you're probably going to pick it up like 7th to 10th, yeah, is my guess. Yeah. I don't think you're going to be first picking this card.
Yeah, I feel like I'm always going to want one in every black deck that I play.
That's possible. I still don't think you're going to be first picking it very often.
Well, we'll have to see how that one goes.
We will.
How about we talk about the next removal spell?
Mm-hmm, one of my pet ones.
Yeah, this one's interesting.
Pigment Storm, 3 red, so 5 mana, sorcery. Pigment Storm deals 5 damage to target creature. Excess damage is dealt to that creature's controller instead. So I gave this card a D+.
D+, wow. I gave that card a C+, and that is based not on the history of bad 5 mana sorcery removal, but it's based on the fact, again, that most of the creatures in the format are quite small, and this kills like almost every creature in the format.
Yeah, that may be so, but, like, I don't know when the last time 5 mana sorcery speed Like, I don't even know that 5 mana, 4 and a black finishing blow at instant speed in M21 was a C+. Obviously, that was competing with Grasp of Darkness, but that was a card that people were relatively down on. Mm-hmm. I think it was probably a C at best, and that was instant speed.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't one of those people, though. I definitely took finishing blow like a C+. There was also Turn to Slag, which was 3 red, 5 damage to a creature, which this is what this is. But M21 had a bunch of big, fat creatures in it, and this doesn't seem to have that. So I'm just sort of assuming that it says 5 mana, destroy target creature at sorcery speed. I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm a little too high. I tend to be that on removal, but maybe it's a C. You're a D+. Explain yourself.
Yeah, I just think historically these have not been cards that are a high priority to main deck. Turn to Slag, Aerostorm, the red 5 mana sorcery speed removal spell has historically been a card that I think is overrated by the Magic community and just generally isn't all that good.
But it does have a relevant second ability. Like, if you kill an X1, you do 4 damage to face, which is not nothing.
That's true, but I don't think that's better than Aerostorm's second ability, which was you could just do 5 damage to face, or Turn to Slag, second ability, which was 2-for-1-ing your opponent if they had a good equipment. I think it probably will be overrated by the Magic community, but I don't think it's a card that you, Garrett Gardner, are going to be main decking a lot of the time. I think you're just going to find it too slow and clunky.
Well, I think C+. I just think D+ is way too low. I think it'll be at least a C-, but I'm thinking it'll be higher than that just because it kills almost all these dinky little creatures. Because I think this format is really based on like small creatures in value off of spells mattering. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing, is that this is a spell and you get to trigger Magecraft off of it.
That's true. Magecraft does help it a lot. But if all this stuff is small, then it's just always going to be trading down on mana if people aren't jamming a ton of 5 or 6 drops in their deck. Gut reaction, how many of these do you think you're generally going to want to be playing in your deck?
Oh, no more than 2, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be between 0 and 1, which is why I have it as a D+.
We'll see.
We will.
we'll see. Why don't we move to the next card, which is, this one's going to be a blast. This is one that we came up with the idea for this episode for. But Stone Rise Spirit. And let me read it, because I hate it so much. 1 and a white for a spirit bird creature. It's a 1/2 flying, and it has 4 mana, and exile a card from your graveyard. Target creature gains flying until end of turn. I gave this card a D-, because it's 2 mana for a 1/2 flying, which I think is super terrible rate. And its ability is so slow and clunky that I just do not see this card being a major player. What about you?
Yep, I'm super bullish on this card. I gave it a C+. I think this... What? I'm stoked about it. I am putting my flag in. I think this is, you know, if it ends up being a C, I'm not going to be super surprised, but I do think it is going to be a C or a C+ level card. I think it's going to be a solid role player. It's a spirit. There's spirit synergy in this set.
Right.
And I'm thinking of Keen Glidemaster.
Okay, so Keen Glidemaster was a 2/1 for 1 and a blue that had an activated ability, 2 and a blue, to give a creature flying until end of turn.
I think a 2-mana 1/2 flyer is worse than a Goblin Piker.
2-mana 2/1?
But I don't think it's that much worse.
I think that creatures with 1 power are so irrelevant to the game board state. You need to have 2 power to be relevant. There's so many 3/2s, and also you need a clock on somebody. Like, if you have to hit somebody 20 times with a 1/2 versus 10 times with a 2/1, you know? That's the baseline that I usually operate on.
Yeah, that's true. But like, if your Keen Glidemaster attacked for 1 turn and this attacks for 3 turns, then it's done more damage than a Keen Glidemaster. Or if it attacks for 2 turns, then it's done the same amount of damage.
But yeah, but you have to block too. You have to trade your creature with, you know, like Keen Glidemaster could trade with 3/2s and 4/2s.
Definitely true, but it wouldn't be able to block pest tokens now, would it?
No, it wouldn't. I suppose. I mean, 2 mana for a 1/2 flying, I think, is like a D-. And that's where I mean, listen, maybe it's not quite a D minus because the ability isn't nothing and it has some synergy throughout the set. Like removing things from your graveyard can trigger things in the red white college. But its ability is so slow and clunky. 4 mana, and you have to have something in your graveyard that you want to exile just to give something flying until end of turn. Like that's much worse than Keen Glidemaster, which is 3 mana to just give something flying. You don't need to have anything in your graveyard.
I mean, it's one more mana for this one, but it's less color intensive.
Yeah.
So, and it still has haste. Well, but like it's still
the power of Keen Glidemaster was that you could fly like 2 things, right? You could fly like 2 attackers for the win. You can never do that with a Stonerise Spirit. You got to have 2 cards in your graveyard and 4 mana. And the other power was that if there was a board lock on the ground, you could just fly your 6/6 a few times, but you need to have a card in your graveyard each time you do that for this card.
Yeah, I think cards are going to end up in your graveyard a little more often than they would normally because there are spells. And then also just any time you're able to get that value off of exiling stuff from your graveyard, like if you're flying the 3/3 and bashing in when you don't have anything else to do, I think that's going to be pretty good. I think it's just going to play well. I think it plays well with the 2/2 that taps to give your spirits +1/+0. I think it plays well with the, what is it, Combat Mentor, 3 and a white for a 2/3 flyer. And at beginning of combat, it gives another creature +1/+0 and vigilance.
Yep.
I think there's just enough stuff in this set that it's going to be a pretty solid role player. And it's going to help enable the things that you want to enable. It's a fine late game top deck because it can do something in a board stall, and it has flying, and it can block a pest token, the most important job of all.
Yeah, I just don't think that ability is going to come into play that often, and I think the body is so bad that I'm actively not going to want to pick these cards and put them in my deck.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going out on a limb on this one. I could certainly be wrong.
I mean, I kind of am too. A D minus is probably too low, but
I am looking forward to drafting the Lorehold deck and trying to make it work. I think there's a lot of synergistic, powerful pieces there, and hopefully you just don't lose to a 2-mana 5/4.
Well, that's another knock against it, right? If Lorehold, the red white college, ends up being the most powerful, then you're not going to want to play dorky 1/2 flyings for 2 in your deck. You're going to want to play cards that actually do stuff.
Yeah, but you won't always get the Tome Shredder or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing too, is if you're exiling things from your graveyard and Tome Shredders are doing the same thing, you're gonna run out of gas.
Well, not if we talk about the next card.
Okay. Which is?
Lorehold Excavation. This is red and a white for an enchantment. At the beginning of your end step, mill a card. If a land card was milled this way, you gain 1 life. Otherwise, Lorehold Excavation deals 1 damage to your opponent. And then it has an activated ability, 5 colorless mana. Exile a creature card from your graveyard. Create a tapped 3/2 red and white spirit creature token.
So I have Lorehold Excavation at C-.
Yep, and I gave it a B-.
I just think that this card is so slow. Mm-hmm. The token comes into play tapped. Mm-hmm. And I get that what it's doing, Lorehold is all about graveyard recursion and it's fueling that. But 5 mana just for a 3/2 and some like damage and life gain, it doesn't seem like it will be very good unless you literally play it on turn 2 every time you get it. Like it's a terrible, terrible top deck.
If you're getting beaten down, obviously it's horrible. But if you draw it in a board stall, I think it's going to be fine. I think you're going to, as long as you have 7 mana, you're going to get to do stuff with it immediately. So mostly the reason I'm high on this card is I just kind of had a feeling that I think it's going to be the type of card by the end of the format that if you see a pack one, pick one, you're going to first pick it because it's the glue that holds the entire Lorehold deck together.
Right, because you're relying on that self-mill is what you're saying, because there isn't a ton of that, I've noticed.
Exactly. And so what I'm basing my grade on is the idea that that 5-mana ability is essentially your backup plan. And so you're primarily playing the card for the red and the white to keep your graveyard full whenever you draw this card, deal some damage, gain some life. And then if you run out of stuff to do, hey, you can start making spirits.
Right. It's just like that ability is so clunky. A tapped 3/2 and you have to exile a creature. that it's just like, it's not going to save you. So you're going to really need the other parts of this to work with other cards. I think some people think this card's like F, you know? I'm saying C minus to be, I think that I understand what the card's trying to do and I think it can get there, but I just don't think it's going to end up going that hard.
Yeah, maybe not. When I was reviewing the Boros cards, I was like, man, these seem really powerful. I'm just worried about having enough stuff in your graveyard. And so that's why I gave this a high grade. Maybe that means that Lorehold's just going to be garbage all ways around and all these cards are going to be terrible and you'll be able to lord it over me for eternity. But
that's the purpose of this whole episode. So great.
Yeah.
Perfect. I will do that.
I think it's going to be good though.
Okay, so how about the next one? We have Serpentine Curve, which is 3 and a blue, sorcery, a common. It says, create a 0/0 green and blue fractal creature token. Put X +1/+1 counters on it, where X is 1 plus the total number of instant and sorcery cards you own in exile and in your graveyard. Number one point on this is that it doesn't count itself. So this is basically a 4-mana 1/1.
Yep, that's what it always is. No reason to look any further. Can't believe I gave this dumb card a C+.
See, I gave it a D+. I know that it's not a 4-mana 1/1, but this is the exact sort of card that I tend to avoid, because like, what is the upside here? Like, you need to have this be at least a 3/3 for it to be playable when you cast it.
I disagree.
Okay.
So I think that's one use case for it, right? 3 and a blue for a 3/3, and then it's a hill giant.
Yeah.
But if you play your first one as a 2/2 and get a Magecraft trigger off of it, I think that is around the same realm as the 3/3. And so I think those sort of go together in a way that makes it happy enough. But then on top of that, they just stack extremely well. Like in a Spells Matter set, I think spells that make creatures, especially if they can become really, really big creatures, are going to be better than they look. And I think you probably would be happy playing like up to 4 of these things in your deck.
But I mean, what's the like ceiling on this? It's like 4 mana for a 6/6 or something like that. Like that's what you're hoping to achieve with this thing, but you have to do it late anyway. So you're getting a mana discount on a 6/6 later in the game.
Well, and it's fueling your graveyard with spells and it's triggering Magecraft when you do it.
I don't know. We've seen this effect before, you know, like we've seen similar effects to this before that count, you know, they make creatures. I think there was one in War of the Spark. And I just like, it's never really been very good, but also, you know, I tend to shy away from that sort of deck. Like, I think Serpentine Curve is just like bad and you're not going to want to play it. Like, I think 4 mana for a 2/2 trigger Magecraft is like going to be pretty miserable. I've seen the Magecraft triggers, and for in general, it creatures make themselves a little bit bigger with +1/+1 counters, or you just like drain one. There's not that many that like make more creatures or anything that big.
No, but they don't have to. If you get a +1/+1 counter, that's pretty good. And especially
when, I don't know, like so a 4-mana 2/2 that put a +1/+1 counter on target creature, it sounds pretty bad.
I think that would be fine. I don't think that would be like great or anything, but imagine if you got 2 Magecraft triggers, or imagine if you got 1 Magecraft trigger but then you had another Serpentine Curve in your hand. So I think this is probably where me valuing the lesson cards higher than you helps as well, because I'm imagining my graveyard filling up faster, I think.
Right.
Because right. I'm just going to have access to more of those, and more of those cards are going to get in there.
So you're assuming you're playing like learn cards and then getting Mascot and you're curving into this. But even if you do that, right, it's 1+X, right? So let's say on 2 you play a learn card, on 3 you play a Mascot, on 4 you play this, and you have just built a 3/3.
Yeah, then it would be a 3/3.
So like your grand curve out is a hill giant.
Yeah, but then all of the other ones in your deck get better.
And then the next one is a 4-mana 4/4, and the next one's a 4-mana 5/5. It just, like, it doesn't seem that impressive to me.
Yeah, but what if you copy it with the uncommon?
Are you really thinking about doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think spells matter. Like, I think that's one of the themes of the deck and one of the themes of Izzet.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see where Serpentine Curve is. I assume that a Spells Matter set is going to make it somewhat better, but it is like the exact sort of card that I try to avoid playing. So are there any parting thoughts you have on our disagreements on the Strixhaven preview cards?
I don't think so. I'm looking forward to drafting with you on Friday to see
me too,
where we land on the Lesson and Learn cards. I guess I'm also curious to see how quickly it's going to become apparent which one of us was right on those.
It's probably going to take a little while, I assume, because the meta takes a while to settle.
I feel like it could be that, or it could just be like the first draft. It's like, oh, wait, these are broken, or, oh, wait, these are terrible.
Right.
Like, I drafted what I thought was a great version, and it's actually just unplayable.
Yeah. I'm excited. I think this set looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, me too. I'm really stoked about it.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening to Mystical Dispute. You can check out our website at mysticaldispute.com. I'm Garrett Gardner. You can find me at twitch.tv/gguards. And Zach Ortz can be found at twitch.tv/zvazda.
Bye.
Stay chill.